Hello and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. About a month ago, an article on toxic masculinity caught my eye on LinkedIn. And it's a topic I've been particularly interested in, especially in relation to how gender equality initiatives might be inadvertently contributing to the creation of unhealthy male role models. So I reached out to the author of this article, who told me he's actually working on a men at work survey to gain some insight into the male experience in the workplace and to facilitate more open conversations for men inside organizations. One thing led to another, and today we are here where he joins me to talk about the findings of that survey. Jindy Mann is a leadership coach and organizational consultant, and as the founder of Leader, Brother, Son, he works with individuals, groups, and organizations to facilitate change, learning, and growth. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Jindy, welcome to the show.
Hey, like, how's it going?
All good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well. As I was saying earlier, I'm recovering from COVID, so I hope people will be patient with me if I'm a bit slow today.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm sure you'll be fine, and the audience are a forgiving lot, very forgiving lot, so they'll be grateful for all the knowledge that you will be sharing with us today for sure. Let's break the ice in my traditional way. I'm curious, when you were little, who did you want to be when you grew up?
Who did I want to be? I don't know about who, but I knew, I had a sense of what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a journalist. So I was very passionate about language and the power of language. I was also very interested in media and the news, mostly because my dad used to watch the news a lot and we always had newspapers in the house. And the idea of searching for truth and trying to find the truth of a story. So all those three things combined meant I had this idea that being a journalist might be something I'd want to be, and didn't end up pursuing that because of various reasons, mostly this idea that came from my family that it wasn't a secure or well-paid career, which is true. But I suppose in many ways, all of those things I describe now in my work now as a coach, as a facilitator, as an organizational consultant, all of those things really are in that work.
So that element of you being curious of how things and people work, that's still there. That's something that you combine in the work that you do today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have an ongoing joke with my wife that the question I seem to enjoy most is what's really going on. And that seems to be the question that drives my life and my relationships. So I'm constantly trying to figure out what's really going on.
I think that's a fair question. I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. Always. It's as if we always seeking that there's something wrong, that there's something else at play. And that's been pointed out to me a number of times. It's like, why are you picking at this? Can you just leave it? And yes, I can. But I'm genuinely often curious how things work. And I just want to know of what's behind. A journalist, I understand. Why not a detective, for example? That's never drawn you there?
Yeah, it was the language aspect, I think. The idea of going and finding out and then writing a narrative or a story and telling a truth, a version of the truth to other people. And all of those things combined felt really appealing to me, actually, and really important. And that was partly, I think, some formative big stories, news stories when I was growing up, one of which was a football disaster in the UK and the way that was reported, which turned out to be really bad journalism, in fact, and for a number of reasons and quite political. And a bunch of other stories that were formative in me growing up, wars and some other things. I'm realizing that those stories told a version of the truth and there was always a lot more to find out. So I think there were some formative things that happened. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s as a teenager and there were some big things going on in terms of news and journalism in those days. So I think that was quite formative for me as well.
The football disaster that you meant, is that Hillsborough or Hazel? Or is there another?
Hillsborough, yeah. Hillsborough. I'm a Liverpool fan, so it was very close to my heart. And yeah, I could go off into a whole
I think we could go on a tangent. You could go on Hillsborough. I could go about Hazel because I'm a Juventus supporter.
Right.
over 2 decades, and obviously there's the situation there that happened. But we're not here. But that being said, that element of you being curious about, you know, how things work, how people work, and the language element, kind of relay in that. I think I might be asking you that question later on, because I'm guessing that's kind of contributed to potentially one of the reasons why you actually did the survey that I mentioned in the introduction. But before we get into, because obviously now you're the founder of Lead the Brother Son, where you do a lot of work in kind of in terms of masculinity and male role models. You also work as the Selfish Leader, where you do kind of a lot of coaching more broadly speaking than that. What got you into this, these topics? Maybe let's narrow it down to the element of masculinity, the work that you do through Lead the Brother Son.
Yeah. So there's probably, again, some key parts of my story that brought me to the work. So the first is probably that I grew up in two cultures, Indian culture and British culture. So my parents were Indian immigrants, and both of those cultures, and I was born in the UK, both of those cultures are very patriarchal and have a particular idea of masculinity and the role of men, which I was trying to fit into, but never quite did because that wasn't me. So that was a kind of ongoing tension in my childhood. Probably the next formative thing that happened was I lost my dad when I was 13. And my dad had a heart attack when he was 48. The main contributing factor to him having a heart attack at 48 was a huge amount of stress and pressure that he was carrying that he was unable to talk about. He didn't know how to talk about it or to really process his emotions. So that was a big thing for me. Then I was in this situation at the start of my teenage years of trying to figure out on that threshold of heading towards adulthood and becoming a man, and not really having any role models or any people around me to guide me. So I was kind of making lots of mistakes, trying to figure things out on my own. And in the 90s, male culture in the UK was lad culture, is the way I describe it, and lads magazines. And it wasn't a particularly positive portrayal of masculinity. And then sort of moving through that, going to university, coming out of university, I went straight into organizations. So I started working for an oil company, then I went into consulting. I've spent the last 20 years inside a variety of different organizations, mostly as a consultant, and saw many, the same sort of things repeating over and over again in terms of men and how masculinity or a certain idea of masculinity plays out inside organizations, how that impacts men, but also impacts the culture of the organization and everyone inside the organization. So kind of all those things together, I think, led me to this work and feeling a need and a desire and a realization that I was in this position to do something about this and to start some of these conversations.
Because you've started off with the coaching in a more broader sense. That's when we first connected, if I remember right, a few years ago, and we started talking about coactive coaching, if I remember right, that technique. You introduced me to that, which I'm, by the way, very, very grateful for, because I've been using it since we spoke. But then you navigated to the role models, to the elements of masculinity. And that's the thing that really resonated with me when I saw your post on LinkedIn, because I'm often curious these days of, you know, we're going through major changes, major transitions in our society, and obviously as a result within our organizations. And the cynical part of me thinks about a lot of the movements within organizations in terms of gender equality, equity, pay gaps, all sorts of things. Even if you move it completely away from gender related topics, is a lot of the times I can't help but think that organizations might be using these as PR stints. They're more kind of more to show rather than kind of mean substance, and that as a result we potentially are overcompensating the other way, therefore creating this element where the issues that you've experienced, that you shared with us and are looking to solve or explore at the very least and do something about them, are potentially actually being emphasized even harder, even more, because men are being, I don't know, vilified, misunderstood, and actually creating that space where men don't feel like they can now open up and talk and change things. And I know it was something I wanted to ask you, is I know that you don't like the term toxic masculinity, because we spoke about it and you've mentioned that, but I never had the opportunity to ask you why. What is it about that term? Is that something that you could tell us a little bit more about?
I think, like a lot of terms, it's become so widely used that it's become almost meaningless. And also the real meaning of it has become lost. But the term itself suggests that there is something wrong with masculinity, and it's become very pejorative and used very loosely and very freely in ways that I think aren't necessarily helpful. So there are aspects of male behavior that absolutely need to be called out and that we're dealing with in society right now and in our culture. And that's really important. I think what can happen with using terms like this is they become these general terms that are used anytime a man is doing anything that is bad behavior, and that it's being associated with masculinity in some ways. And I'm not sure that's helpful. I'm not sure that's helpful to the debate. I'm not sure it's helpful to progress when we talk about gender and identity and masculinity.
That is true. That is true. It's yet another one of those terms where, as you said, it is being used without really understanding what it means. And by using that, we are potentially causing more harm than it's worth. Because as you said, there are behaviors that we need to get rid of, but there are also behaviors that we need to encourage and emphasize. And when you use labels like that, it's definitely more difficult to do. So we know why you got into this line of work. We know roughly, as I mentioned in the introduction, why you kind of, what the reasons are behind the survey, what you're planning on doing with that. But what was actually the kind of the trigger moment for you? Okay, this is the time to do that survey. What was that, and what made you do that and act now?
Yeah, so precursor to doing this survey, which is looking at, we surveyed 55 men inside organizations to ask their experience of being in workplaces. Precursor to that is I spent over 2 years with other coaches and facilitators running men's groups. And these men groups are 8-week groups that we run for free. And we invite men into a weekly conversation to talk about what they feel they need to talk about. And we help them do that. And it's very consciously a space where we encourage them to talk about things they might not feel able to talk about elsewhere or with other people in a way that they possibly don't talk about. So for example, it's not a space where we talk about things in the abstract and where we talk about things in second or third person. So we don't go, oh, you know when. Or we don't talk about things like football or, you know, sports, or because there's plenty of other spaces for that. It's a space to talk about my experience. I feel this. When this happens, this is what's going on for me. And to start to hear that from other people as well. So having done that for 2 years and we run these groups for free, we're starting our 9th group next week, actually. We started to realize and have conversations with people that suggested that there was more work we could do, and we could take this work into organizations. And in doing that, that enabled us to keep doing this work and keep running the free groups. So the it seemed a logical next step for me for us to find out a little bit about what's going on for men in organizations. Yeah. I mentioned I have, you know, 20 years experience in different organizations, but also really valuable to get, you know, much wider perspectives and hear just almost like a pulse check of what are men experiencing inside organizations right now and get some insights. So that's what we did. And that was the reason.
I'm curious because, dear listeners, I genuinely don't know what, Jindy and I haven't had the chance of the opportunity to talk about the kind of the findings of this survey. So I know, Jindy, that you're still crunching the results, basically. So you will be probably relying on some notes, as you said. Absolutely feel free to kind of, it's more, I'm really curious to find out what you've learned, what came out of it. Maybe let's start that. I'll hand over the microphone to you to share what you think is relevant, and I'll jump in with questions here and there, as they say. And by the way, for those who are tuning in on LinkedIn, feel free to pop the questions in the comments as well if you're curious, and we'll direct them at Jindy as well. So What did you find? Is there anything that kind of straight away jumped out at you and went, I didn't expect this?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question itself. There wasn't that much that surprised me based on our experience of having run these groups for over 2 years. Well, we asked 7 fairly simple questions, but we kept it a fairly brief survey. So I'm going to refer to some notes here because I've still got brain fog. So, and I won't go through all the results, but I'll just maybe mention a couple of things. So one of the questions we asked respondents to name the 3 emotions they most commonly felt at work. And the ones that came out top were frustration. A third of the respondents said frustration was one of the main emotions they felt at work. Anxiety, a quarter of the men who replied, anxiety was another one. And fear and joy were both, a fifth of all men that replied said fear and joy were commonly felt emotions at work. I'll share one more thing and then maybe just pause. And we also asked how comfortable men felt being themselves at work. Really showing up to work as their full selves or some idea of their full selves. 42% of men said they weren't comfortable being themselves at work.
Wow. I'm guessing the survey itself, you don't dig in, or do you, to what that means? Is there a follow-up question for them to answer when they say, I don't feel myself? And does it provide any opportunity for context setting? If it doesn't, based on your experiences from the groups, as you said, because it's kind of, the survey is an extension of that, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so a couple of the questions that followed might give some sense of what's going on there, but they don't go into too much detail. We were keeping the survey quite quick and light to make sure we got plenty of responses. What we're planning to do next is a series of conversations, much like this one, where we'll speak to guys and get a deeper insight into their experience at work. But one of the questions we asked within the survey after that one was, what do you find hardest to talk about? And the things that came up were, the top one was financial situation. 67% of men said that was one of the hardest things to talk about at work. Their fears and worries, 64%. Insecurities and struggles, 60%. Failures, 55%. And the fifth highest one was mental health. 45% of men said that was one of the hardest topics to talk about at work. Now, interestingly, with mental health, 31% also said that it was one of the easiest topics to talk about at work. Now, without having further conversations, we don't know for sure what's behind that, but that's interesting to me that there could be some workplaces where, as we know, mental health there's more and more awareness around that, organizations doing more and more around that. So it could be there's a big spread of how successful organizations are being and how much awareness there is of mental health in different organizations. So 45% saying really hard to talk about, 31% saying easy to talk about. So quite an interesting, that's the only thing that appeared in both lists. Hard and easy.
Wow. So a bit kind of, in a way, bit binary is the one way or another, kind of no middle ground. I'm not, referring back to the other results that you've mentioned, I'm not surprised by that, as you probably weren't either. But what makes me curious is what does that mean, right? Because we roughly know where this comes from in terms of, you know, men not being able to express their emotions, because they've probably never been showed or taught how to do that. Same about kind of frustration, or same in terms of the financial pressures, right? Because I believe we still live in a society that on the surface is equal, equitable, or at the very least striving for that. It will take a while for that to actually be the case. But then underneath, we're still men being seen through the lens of whether they are successful or not, whether they are proper men, you know, in the quotation marks version of the definition, through the lens of, you know, being a provider, being a protector. I am a believer of role models, male, female role models, and kind of in psychological development, emotional development of individuals, of families, of kids, and so on and so forth. That's probably a topic for a different conversation. But where does that fit in? How can men address this in the workplace, just to keep it to that? Because obviously we could be here for days on end trying to unpack it all. That's the word I'm looking for. In the workplace, what does that mean? How can we tackle some of these? Again, maybe through starting off with the facts of what you've picked up on these topics for your previous work. What does that manifest as in the workplace to make it maybe more relatable to people listening?
Yeah, so I think it's probably worth talking about men in general and society in general, because as we're talking about this to organizations, what's going on outside an organization will emerge inside it. You know, it doesn't get left at the office doors, and that's true for everyone. So, you touched on something there about, you know, boys and girls and what happens in terms of their development. One of the things that happens with girls is their emotional development happens quicker. So by the time they reach high school, they're typically 12 months to 18 months ahead in terms of emotional development and intellectual development as well. Boys, if you look at very young boys and very young girls, they are all quite emotionally expressive, and they will show love. And young boy friendship is very much one that has all the hallmarks of love. Around about 7 or 8, boys start to take on this idea that they shouldn't be like that. That the emotional expression in that way is not the way that a boy or a man should be. And so this is where we start to see gender really becoming socialized. And gender is socialized. It's a social construct. It's an identity. So how that then manifests later in life is what we're talking about now. That is what then emerges in the workplace. This idea that I'm showing, expressing my emotions quite openly is not what a man does. And when in the conversations that we have had with men over the last few years, and some of the things that have come out of this survey, is it's an idea that if I show my emotions openly, I guess it is associated with things like weakness, and it leaves me vulnerable, which means that I'm open to attack. And I use those words quite deliberately, because we see the same things in other species, primates, for example, chimpanzees, bonobos. There's this idea of not being open to attack and not being vulnerable. And the same is true of men. Organizations, adult men, have this fear or these associations with being openly emotional and expressive and available, and they're also are out of practice. They've almost de-skilled themselves at really opening up and sharing, and that means that limits how they can connect and relate to other people.
Those are exactly those lenses that I was referring to. Is that because, you know, when men will show emotions, as you said, vulnerability towards attacks, that's what's often kind of seems to be created, or a feeling or semblance of that. But also when they do, whether said openly or not, often the reaction is, well, man,
yes,
what can we do about it?
Yeah, that's a really important point. There is a sense of a very real threat of being rejected from the group. Groups, from a psychological perspective, are essential. They give us a sense of security and a sense of belonging and a sense of a bigger identity. But they also require us to conform, to fit in. And so if we are expressing or showing something that goes against the norms of the group, then we risk rejection. And in organizations, particularly organizations where there is a masculine, what was referred to in one piece of research as masculine defaults in the culture, then to show yourself in that way, to be the individual who decides to open up and to be vulnerable, can leave you feeling quite exposed. And therefore you choose not to. That's why you choose not to, because it can leave you open to attack or ridicule or rejection from the group. So to come to your question, what can we do about it? We asked the men in the survey, you know, what would help you to show up more fully at work? And they named those five themes. It was an open question, so we allow people to answer however they wanted to. But there's five themes that clearly sort of emerged from that. One was role modeling. So I said, if they saw senior leaders doing this, that would really help them to do that. The second was safe spaces where they could show up more openly and more vulnerably, talk and express themselves more emotionally. The third was psychological safety. So a feeling that in showing up in this way, they weren't putting themselves at risk and they would be met with understanding. The fourth was mental health awareness, or greater awareness of mental health. So a level of emotional awareness and dexterity and skill within the organization, so that if someone expresses how their mental health is, it will be received in a certain way and with a certain level of understanding and tact and skill. And then the last one was dedicated time, having actual time in which men could go and have these conversations or connect with people in this way. So that was a factor perhaps of certainly the way it came across in the comments, both of busyness, but also the fact that saying I'm going to go and take this time for these sorts of conversations didn't feel possible.
So this was an open-ended question, as you said. So they were putting in whatever they felt like was right for them, and you picked out these five themes that you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, these themes were quite consistent in the answers, yeah.
Again, some of them, the role models, the psychological safety, not surprising at all. But one thing that side thought in a way that was triggered by this is coming back to, I think, one of the early questions that was also in the survey, that one of the answers that men don't know, they can't be themselves, can't feel, you know, like their true selves, which is a common theme among people in general these days, especially in the workplace, right? In the workplace that we're trying to bring that. And my question is the same as to do with emotions is, first of all, how do we want to feel and what emotions we want to experience and how do we want to feel? And even, this is a personal experience, even for me, after several years of self-development, therapy and all sorts of things, I still find it difficult to answer these questions. And therefore, if I can't answer the questions, how can I even get to the stages of, you know, how feeling different, being myself, right? Knowing who myself is. And I appreciate this goes kind of beyond men, because I think it's far more important for this topic to be covered on both men and women, and kind of across the spectrum of genders. That's kind of where I think a lot of people get stuck as well.
Yeah. So if we dig into this a little bit, so the idea of a singular authentic self is a little bit of a myth. But there is an idea of being authentic in the moment. And even within that, we're not suggesting that a completely unfiltered way, you're just saying whatever is going on in your head or whatever you're feeling. But there is something about recognizing what's going on for you, choosing what to say. And it's in that choosing that the filtering happens. What is safe to say in this environment? And what's kind of a thread throughout all of my work, the coaching, the consulting, the men's work, is real conversations. Do we have the capacity to have real conversations? And when I say real conversations, I mean being courageous, being honest about how you feel, and being able to express that to someone else, and being able to receive the same from someone else, to really sit with what might be some discomfort, might be some challenge. But also in doing that, you also are able to express things like joy more fully. So for example, you show up at your team meeting in the morning, someone asks how you're feeling, and you might simply say, not great today, actually, some difficult stuff going on at home, but that's as far as you go. That may or may not be appropriate, but having the capacity and the confidence and the courage to be able to do that. Another example would be to really challenge someone on something that you feel has contravened some boundaries or some values, particularly important at work, to call out behavior that you think is inappropriate, and be able to say that without fear, and be able to sit in the complexity of that conversation. Because it's not just you saying it, it's then also hearing the response. And that's really, this comes to the wider impact, doing some of this work with men. This is the wider impact on the culture. People have more real conversations. If you think of the knock-on impact of that inside the culture of an organization, it's much wider than just a group of men having conversations.
The thing that resonated a lot was, you know, the answer to the question. I appreciate this is a very British, to a certain extent American thing, as well. Hi, how are you? Which is just a greeting. It's a formal thing. And usually the answer is, yeah, I'm good, thanks. Well, not too bad. Things like that. Those are just like, we don't go in. I appreciate, obviously, if, you know, if it's with people that you don't know, you meet for the first time, again, part of the rituals, masks, or whatever, however you want to say that we put on. In there, I'm sort of able to understand that, let's put it that way. But in an environment with people that we see day in, day out in the office, in our teams, but even with our friends, people closest to us, we do the same thing. We find it difficult. Again, speaking broadly, not just about men, just to say, you know, actually, it sucks. You know, I've had a really rough couple of days or weeks or whatever, but I'm on the mend. I don't know whether we find it difficult because we don't know what, you know, we're afraid of talking about that ourselves. It's something on our side or inside of us. Or is it because we don't know how the other person's going to react? So it's that kind of external environmental element. Because I appreciate it's probably both, a mixture of both. Because I'm often guilty when I talk about what I do in terms of company culture is that, you know, that I attack organizations that they don't create environments and things like that they don't work on culture enough to allow psychological safety for people to be able to speak up, to be themselves, and so forth. And yes, and I think it's something on me that I need to talk about this more. It's something I also believe is that it's, at the very least, oversimplifying, it's a 50-50 dynamic. It's the organization, but it's the individuals as well. So all the things that you said about, you know, us individually doing things, contributing to knowing our own emotions. And yes, definitely it's not personalities, are not a singular thing. But it's having that courage to speak up. Yes, if it's a tough environment, it's far more difficult. But we also, no one's going to do that for us. We need to decide, okay, this is, you know, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to establish a boundary within the workplace. So it's, again, it's that mixture of environment and us individually. We all create that. We all contribute to that. To be able to have that psychological safety has to be created by the organizations or the group and the individual as well.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something really important there. It is a dynamic interplay between the individual and the culture, because individuals create the culture. What is an organization? It's a collection of people who have come together to perform some tasks together, how to achieve some goal together. And they collectively create the culture by participating in it. Now, that doesn't mean everyone's got equal power. That obviously isn't the case. But it is a participatory dance, individual within the culture. Individuals create the culture also shapes the individuals. Both are true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It works both ways. And I think we often forget that. And that's why there's a struggle within me where you and I are talking about this. You and I believe in this in terms of how men should behave, for lack of a better word, and kind of what in where directions we want to change, how we want to evolve, and to be able to speak up about things like that. But then again, we're still dealing with these lenses. And there is, I think, societal element, which is part of kind of us as humans or maybe as a society, that we go from one situation to the other and we tend to overcompensate. One was bad, we want to change that. We go far too far in the other direction, and we need time to kind of balance it out. So I appreciate we are in this point of time in history that, you know, it hasn't yet leveled. We haven't yet figured it out. And I think it's just going to take a bit of time for us to do. Whether you and I will see that in our generations, I hope we will, but we might not. But with that in mind, I actually don't often ask this question on the podcast, but I'm a huge fan of it. Looking at this situation, Jindy, if you had Aladdin's lamp, a magic wand, whatever, that would grant you a wish that you could change this situation, you could make it with the intention of improving it, what would that wish be? What would you do? How would you want to impact? How would you want to change these things?
What's the situation you're referring to?
The situation that we're in terms of kind of masculinity in the workplace, that we don't have these spaces where men can be themselves, and that it's a bit of an untold story when it comes to men's mental health at work.
I think my Aladdin's lamp wish, I guess, would be the work that we're doing, which is enabling men to rediscover some of those skills and to have spaces and time in which to talk openly, because in doing that, they are also developing relational skills and leadership skills. And that's going to have a knock-on impact across the whole culture. So that's my wish. And that's the wish I'm trying to fulfill, really, by creating these spaces where men feel safe and courageous in having real conversations.
What would, if you had another wish then, as a result of that, what would help you do that even more to make an even greater impact with the work that you do in terms of societal change, attitude change, organizational changes, you know, on a macro, micro scale?
Yeah. So, well, at a societal level, I would say there's a huge conversation to be had around gender and identity. And I mean, that's one that's kind of being had now, but in a very politically contentious way around trans rights, for example. But one thing, if we just go back to what we know for sure, it's that gender is not fixed. Gender is an identity that we construct, and it starts to become constructed from the moment we're born. Even before we're born, it can happen while we're still in the womb. So having better and more open-minded awareness around the very idea of gender and identity in general is something I think would be incredibly valuable in society.
That is true. I would say it's a raging discussion at this moment in time, with a very, very, very polarized in many ways. I'm included in that kind of polarization to a certain extent, because I tend to be bouncing from one concept to another, trying to get my head around it. And I think a lot of people are in the same situation. I totally going from, you know, no, completely agreeing with what you said, but on the other hand, saying actually no, because there are themes in psychology and biology that I subscribe to as well that really contradict what with that. And I think I find that very, very difficult. And that's what makes this whole discussion so important on one hand, but also so difficult. But the element of being open-minded and being able to talk about this, despite having potentially very strong views or opinions, whatever, and still having that dialogue, which is something that we're not having on many topics, many, many topics. That the form of dialogue and discussion, I believe, in a way is disappearing. At the very least, the media seems to suggest that it's still going on. But actually, if you watch most of the mainstream outlets, it's more pitching people against one another than actually creating dialogue or discussion on these topics.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on dialogue, because that's at the heart of the work we do in groups. We are creating dialogue spaces. And what I mean by dialogue is a space that you enter not looking for a fixed answer or even for answers at all. It's a space you enter with an attitude of curiosity and openness and a willingness to enter into the experience and see what happens. And in that spirit, when people enter into a dialogue in that spirit, something else emerges. Just the process of having a conversation leads to some collective wisdom, individual wisdom, and answers can emerge from, but it's much more unstructured and nebulous than this idea of going into a discussion with seeking an outcome or to win the debate, which is often the way conversations are conducted inside organizations. Dialogue is a very different experience, and that's what I think is absent for many men, and that's why many men come to our groups, but also in society in general, as you touched upon. The ability to have open dialogue without a fixed position seems to be an increasingly rare thing.
I think the challenge lies in understanding or seeing, maybe that's what helps me, seeing dialogue as something that is ongoing, and it's not just one conversation. And as you kind of mentioned, it's with no fixed outcome of fixed views that you necessarily go into that, right? That there's you finish the dialogue, and therefore you've got an opinion or whatever, but you solve the problem. For me, that's more of a debate, you know, where you and I are chucking things at one another, points of views, not really communicating and talking to one another. More, as I said, me waiting for you to finish to jump in and say my point. I think that's kind of more of a debate and not a very healthy one. But a dialogue is, for me, that's something definitely that's ongoing. I think we as men have a lot of heavy lifting to do. The organizations that we work in, they also have a lot of heavy lifting to do to be able to create these dialogues and have these. I know for a fact I'm a very curious person. I like to think of myself as open-minded, but I know that I'm very, very fixed in certain opinions and views. And that causes conflict for me internally. It's also kind of contradiction, because as much as I want to listen, then going into that dialogue that you mentioned without a semi-fixed viewpoint, that, or at the very least, that openness for it to be challenged or changed or discussed, is often difficult. For me, I mean, on any topic, doesn't have to be to do with masculinity. So I'm assuming a lot of men have the same challenge. On top of that, not being able to necessarily talk about their emotions, or because they're not able to, because they've never been taught, not to mention the environment that they're in.
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, it's not just about expressing emotions. It's about expressing views with the openness that they might be challenged, or they might hear something different. And hearing other people's views. There was this great experiment or great event a few years ago. I think it was called America in One Room. And a bunch of sociologists gathered, I think it was something like 1,000 people in a conference center that was representative of every demographic in America. So hence America in One Room. And then they facilitated a series of dialogues between these groups. And then afterwards took some data on what had shifted for people, or what had happened for people. And one of the things they observed was a 20% difference in understanding between people that had radically different views on a particular topic. So abortion and pro-life, for example, would come out of those dialogues saying, I don't necessarily agree with this person, but on average, they were seeing a 20% greater understanding of why they have that position. That's remarkable. And that's just through being able to sit in dialogue together in a particular way.
Wow. Well, I haven't heard that, but that is true. That is true. It's just, you know, having, I think it's that willingness, the openness, just to kind of let things in, whether they sink in, whether they resonate or not, that's a completely different topic. I think we're still, many struggle with that element of letting a little bit of light in of new information. That might be, you know, drastically contradictory to your beliefs, to your mindsets and things like that. And I think that kind of starts with that. And with that, I think I'm trying to kind of circle back a little bit to the situations that men face within organizations. Where's that line between what I mentioned, where men have to do a bit of their heavy lifting and the organizations have to do their heavy lifting in terms of how we can create that whilst we have these kind of contradicting signals from the wider society of, you know, how men should be, those lenses that we mentioned before. Where is that line, and what in the work that you do with your groups and the work that you're going to do with kind of exploring the findings of these surveys, where are you going to take it next? I'm curious.
Yeah, so just pick up on something you said just there. Our strapline for Leader Brother Son is there are 4 billion ways to be a man. And what that represents is that we don't believe there is any way that a man should be. And the same is true for anyone, I think, of any gender. And that's really what we're offering and what we're inviting, this idea to really examine or become aware of what assumptions or ideas have you taken on about being a man without even realizing it? Because you have, we all have. This unconscious conformity that I mentioned to the idea of being a man. And so to sort of come to your question about what can individuals do, it's whatever will increase your self-awareness. And that's useful, not just if you're interested in your role as a man, but your role as anything, your role as a partner, as a parent, as a leader within your organization. Self-awareness is the foundation of all of that. And again, that's another thread that runs through all of my work, is helping my clients to become more aware of what's going on for them. Because that is where the real growth and the real learning happens. Now, there's different ways in which you can do that. You mentioned therapy earlier. I work with a therapist on an ongoing basis. Coaching, group conversations, journaling, meditation, whatever it might be, there are many different ways to develop your self-awareness. And I would suggest that is a good place for anyone to start.
That's definitely, I'll sign my name under that. That's for sure. With that in mind, Jindy, what have you got going on in the next few months, apart from obviously diving further into the survey, the results and exploring that? What have you got coming up?
Well, the main thing that's coming up is I'm going to become a father in 6 weeks for the first time.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, thank you. So that's obviously very exciting and occupies a lot of my thoughts and energy. And yeah, that's going to be a really exciting new chapter. So that for the foreseeable future will be my focus.
Oh, that's going to keep you busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can people find you, connect with you, ask questions, or simply just kind of reach out and learn more about the work that you do, and maybe the results of the survey and kind of anything to do with that or with the work that you do?
Yeah, so the website for the men's work and all of the work we do with men is leaderbrothersun.com. All one word, leaderbrothersun.com. I share most of my thinking, ideas, resources on LinkedIn. So you can find me if you just search my name, Jindy Mann. And I also have a newsletter, which I publish every week, which is not just about men and masculinity. It's actually about my reflections on life in general, sharing my journey, sharing some of what I've learned along the way. So that's probably the three best places.
Excellent. And actually, speaking of resources, a part of your newsletter where you share your thoughts, which I highly recommend everybody subscribes to. Are there any other resources that actually, based on some of the conversation that we've had, that you really like and feel that would be worth for people to check out for themselves?
Oh, yeah, well, that's a great question. Where to start? I'd actually recommend something I've read recently is a book of someone who's a mentor to me, a guy called Lawrence Barrett. He's a Jungian coach and organizational consultant. And he published a book, which was released, I think, back end of last year, called A Jungian Approach to Coaching. And there was a chapter in that on gender and another chapter on groups, both of which are absolutely excellent. And all of his work is very research-based. So it's rooted in psychology, neurobiology, psychodynamics, and obviously Jungian psychology. That is a great grounding on the very concept of gender. So I would highly recommend that as a starting point.
Thank you very much. I'll include that in the show notes for people to find. Jindy, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about the survey and the topic in general. Thank you very much for taking the time. Enjoy the next 6 weeks of yet not being a father. I know you're excited to be, I bet. And then, of course, enjoy as much as you can through the sleep deprivation, through the initial days of, you know, the first days, weeks, and months and years of that. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Lake. Really enjoyed it.
Before you head off, before I let you go, there's one thing I wanted to share with you. And that is to invite you to check out My Culture, My Crisis, which are small, quirky, and often unconventional ideas to inspire cultural changes in your organization. And they are all about promoting psychological safety, collaboration, employee experience, and engagement. And also the topics that we've just discussed with Jindy, they fit in with that as well. Because when you do these things consistently, they have a massive impact on the experience of your people, the business performance, company culture, and help your team basically work better together in more authentic and aligned ways. And you can find them at pm/CMP, CMP for Culture Micro Practices. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast and you would like to support it, to support the show, give those little like and share buttons a little tickle so it can reach the people in your network, or subscribe on whatever platform you get your podcast from. I was your host, Lech Wazowski. Until next time.